It's time for another episode of Game Warden Connection. Your resource for the outdoors. I hope you're ready. Because here's your host, Carlos Gomez and Joe Alexander.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to episode 2 of the Game Warden Connection podcast. This is your host, Joe Alexander. Sitting across from me is the infamous
Carlos Gomez. Here I am. We're going to talk to Arizona today. It's Arizona discussions about hot topics, and we mean that literally because, as everyone knows, Arizona is arid country. It gets hot down that part of the country, and they've got to try to manage their wildlife in some extreme conditions that many of us in the United States are not accustomed to. So there's a lot of considerations that we kick around, and I guess the hot topic that really brought all this about was a discussion on the internet regarding trail cameras.
Or the lack there of using them anymore in Arizona.
That you should not. It was news to us that they outlawed the cellular trail cameras in 2014.
I think, was it 2014 or 2019?
I think it was 2014.
It was quite a while back.
It was 2014, and then 2019, they began the study on this problem.
Okay.
It was 2018 they began the study on this problem, which was trail cameras in general. And it sounds like to me, from what they've been saying, that trail cameras in Arizona, because water is such a limiting factor that makes their wildlife, get so focused in on one location, making them much easier to kill. The trail cameras were hanging off posts and trees and cactus or whatever, like ticks on a coon dog's ears.
If you want a drink, you want a drink.
So everybody's got to get a drink, and they're going to get their picture taken. And sometimes they're getting pictures of each other, so all the hunters know who's visiting the water hole to check their memory cards.
I saw one photograph online that was like, I want to say there were 17 cameras on one water hole, and it looked like they were just trying to figure out how to tie another one onto the post or a fence or a tree or bush.
I think so many of us are accustomed to analyzing a discussion over how that was in our backyard. So we know where we're at in Oklahoma. There's plenty of water, most of the state. There's a lot of habitat, vegetation, lots of places to put your trail cameras, lots of places to find pictures of game or whatever. So it's not a big deal about us having cameras. And I like to use cameras. Cameras are great. So Arizona is finding problems with too many cameras on too small of places. And so we get into that today with Arizona. We talked to Rick Langley, who is a wildlife program manager for the state of Arizona, and his cohort, Sean Wagner, who's the law enforcement program manager. And these guys have a group in Arizona they call the Ethics Committee.
Fair Chase Committee.
And those guys literally review a lot of issues that affect the hunting and pursuit of wildlife in their state. So I think you'll find it very interesting when you realize Arizona is not only a tremendous hunting state and has some really awesome trophy animals, and those people that like to hunt elk know that Arizona is known for their monster elk, but they have a strict limitation on the harvest numbers. And we didn't know that, here in Oklahoma, deer's prolific. We've got a big, generous harvest. Arizona does not.
Yeah. You ever hunted in Arizona?
I have been to Arizona a number of times. I'm trying to think. I have bought licenses and contributed a lot of money. I've owned a a hunting license in Arizona, you have to buy their hunting license.
Oh, yeah, to put in?
To be in the draw.
Yeah.
So I've had their small game license and their fishing license many, many times, but I don't believe I've actually hunted there.
I went one time as a pretty young guy to do some calling for some guys on elk hunt, and it is beautiful country. It's some of the prettiest sunsets I ever seen in Arizona, and you would think that Arizona is just a desert, but up in that high country
it's a diverse state. You know, yeah. Everybody knows they got the Grand Canyon, and they've got the Kaibab, and they've got a lot of big ponderosa pines, and and you know they've got a little bit of water in parts of the state, but a lot of the state is arid, so limiting factor there is going to be their water. So we get into talking to Rick Langley, and we also touch on the fact that there's a game warden organization that covers North America called the North American Wildlife Enforcement Officers Association. And Rick Langley there in Arizona happens to be the current president. So we talk a little bit about that, but I find, again, in Arizona, just like it was in Colorado, there's a lot of interesting things that I never imagined go into their consideration on their game laws.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. So let's get into the conversation without further ado.
Well, Rick, tell any listening audience your years of service, your assigned area, your title,
your background, your pedigree.
We want to know your pedigree.
I'm a mutt. I'm not pedigreed.
A mutt.
Anyway, my name's Rick Langley, and I've worked for Arizona Game and Fish Department for 28 years. I am currently wildlife program manager out of Region 1, which is most of the eastern side of Arizona, headquartered out of Pine Top, Arizona. And I started out as an officer, as a wildlife manager in Arizona. And worked in the field for 12 years. And then about 16 years ago, I took a job out of our regional office as a regional game specialist. And then about a year and a half ago, I took on the role of wildlife program manager, which supervises a game specialist, a non-game specialist, and a landowner relations program specialist. In Arizona, we keep our law enforcement commission, so I still do law enforcement and patrol and things like that, sometimes even on a daily basis. But more time is spent here in the office managing programs than out in the field. And then I've got Sean Wagner here now in the office, and I'll let him introduce himself to you.
Hey, Sean, this is Carlos Gomez, and I'm 41 years recently retired from Oklahoma Department of Wildlife, and my partner here is...
Yeah, I'm Joe Alexander. Nice to meet you, Sean. I'm also a fellow warden and been working law enforcement and conservation enforcement for about 21 years, so...
We appreciate you guys taking a little time with us, and Rick knows us pretty well through other activities, and we may touch on that in a little bit, but tell us a little bit about yourself, Sean, if you would introduce yourself.
Yeah. Thanks, Carlos. And so nice to meet both of you. Again, my name is Sean Wagner, and I'm currently the law enforcement program manager out of the Pine Top region, the same office that Rick works out of. I've been an officer with Arizona for almost 25 years. I was a district game warden or wildlife manager in Arizona for about 23 of those years. And then the last couple of years, I've been in the law enforcement program manager position. I've actually had the district here in Pine Top, which is our game management unit 3B South. I had that unit for almost 20 years before I promoted to this position. And Arizona native, grew up hunting here and fishing and enjoying the outdoors in Arizona. Happy to be here today and help answer any questions that you or other folks may have.
Well, appreciate that. You know, I'm sure Rick has told you that the trail camera controversy, if I can call it that, it erupted a little bit on a Facebook group of game wardens that were discussing this, and that's how it came to fall on my agenda. And that's what we wanted to pick your guys' brain about. I'm sure there's lots of other topics that are of importance to Arizona Game and Fish, and it's not that we want to just dwell on that, but that does seem like a recent hot topic. So tell us if you would, you know, the agency side, if you will, on this controversy. You know, trail cameras are real big everywhere. I use them. I know a lot of guys like to use them. There's a big benefit to sportsmen, and it kind of adds another facet to being a hunter, you know, to be able to see the game, all those times when you're not actually out there looking at the game and helping us to pattern things and figure out, you know, where I want to hunt and when I want to hunt and all that kind of stuff. So I like trail cameras, and I think a lot of other guys do. And I'm sure that the capitalistic system that we all live in loves to sell us trail cameras too. But you guys have some new evolving regulations there. So talk about that.
Yeah, certainly. You know, to kind of back up to sort of maybe first the sort of higher level view of why are we even discussing trail cameras in Arizona, right? I probably would start off with recognizing the fact that our department has for a number of years has a fair chase committee that was put together by the department. And one of the tasks of the Fair Chase Committee is to evaluate, you know, the ever emerging and ever improving technology, and make determinations based on, basically trying to ensure that the technology isn't removing sort of the essence of hunting and the skills development that it takes for, or, you know, what we would expect for people to develop as part of their maturing as a hunter and that kind of thing. And so that's part of what fed into this. The other part too, I think it's important that people realize, hey, trail cameras are a neat tool. They're a neat device for people to use. And in no doubt, has gotten lots of people interested in not just hunting, but the outdoors in general. You know, whether they hunt or not, you know, kids, I mean, there's nothing better than going and checking your camera and finding a picture of a deer, you know, or something. Mm-hmm. But I think one sort of lens that people need to understand when we discuss this trail cam issue is that this isn't back east where we have, you know, just thousands upon thousands upon thousands of deer and really high densities of deer and this is the arid Southwest, right? And where water in particular is a really limiting factor and can be like the number one limiting factor as far as the things where animals are keyed in on and have to go to get a drink, you know, and, you know, yeah, we have forest parts of Arizona and we have desert parts of Arizona, but even our forest parts, there's years this year, in fact, up until 30 days ago, this year was in one of the worst droughts we've seen in decades. And literally, you know, the water is so limiting that when our officers are hauling water to wildlife developments, even up here in the forest, like we're the high country of Arizona, we're hauling water to catchments and some of those are being completely drained by wildlife. Oftentimes, elk numbers are high, you know, deer, antelope, other things, and those waters might go dry in 1 week. and guys are literally having to go haul water to them. And we have numerous volunteers to help with that. And so to paint that picture, when water is such a limiting factor here, one of the big sort of things that stuck out to not only the department, but just the hunting public in general, is that when water is so limiting here, and we have these point water sources, whether it's a man-made, you know, pond, or whether it's a game and fish department owned wildlife drinker, these things were, they were the places where somebody who would go and put out a network of 200 or 300 trail cameras, and maybe that goes on where you live, maybe it doesn't, but it certainly does here. And especially, you know, guys and outfitters too would invest tons and tons of money in cameras, and they would literally saturate every water hole in the entire area with cameras. And we have water developments in some of our prime elk units where we might have there's a little 6-foot square cement drinker where the animals have to drink from, and we might have 10, 15 cameras hanging on posts and tree limbs surrounding that little drinker. Wow. And so there were lots of areas here where literally an animal, whether a trophy animal or not a trophy animal, doesn't matter, an animal could not go get a drink without getting its picture taken on multiple trail cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And so as people, you know, read this trail camera, you know, legislation and rule changes and stuff, I just hope that as they're reading that, they need to sort of understand the picture here of what it is that we're dealing with and what it is that our commission is trying to address. Where we have hunters, some guides and outfitters, and some just hunters, where by completely canvassing areas, they literally have a catalog of every individual animal, and then they basically, you know, put them on their quote hit list or not, you know. Mm-hmm. and even to the extent where some hunters are like, they're like, oh, I want that bull or that buck, and then we'll go hunt, and we can know where he drinks, what days he drinks, how often he drinks, what time of day he drinks, and that's where we'll sit you for your hunt. And so to combat those sorts of issues is really the other part besides the fair chase issue. It's really the other kind of driving thing that made us take a hard look at this technology and what it was doing to the wildlife population and hunting in general here. I'll pause there. So if you have any input or comments or questions.
Well, it sounds like a very valid expectation in my mind that there be some regulation on that. And you do have unique situations with your climate and the region that you are in the country, and everybody knows that the amount of water and the amount of climate, the limiting factors that you're describing, is why you have few deer. It might be why maybe you have some really big deer. I don't know, but you're going to have fewer animals when you've got less food and water for them. So obviously they've got to have escape cover and all those other things. But so the cameras, I've seen it. I've not hunted over there in that circumstance specifically, but I've seen places where it was popular, you know, to observe particular movements, and the trail cameras are easily found. So I could just imagine with a water hole, you're going to have a cluster, especially on public land, a cluster of people that's going to all want to capture pictures.
Let me add one more piece of this too, Carlos, that I was just thinking that is important for people to sort of make the distinction between here and maybe where they live, is most of the land here, it is public land. Right. This isn't largely people being banned from using trail cameras on their private property as much as this is people being banned from using them on public land. And the public land issue has created even a whole bunch of other issues and concerns. Right. I mean, people literally you can't go look and see if there's any deer tracks at this public land water source without getting your picture taken 8 times.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's been a big issue brought up by a lot of people here. They're like, it's one thing if I was on someone's private property, but I'm on the national forest and this place is being carpet bombed with trail cameras where I'm not even sure going out to go to the bathroom if I'm on somebody's trail camera or not on right. public land.
And then there's guy that might have called in sick to work that day too.
Well, there's that too, right? Yeah. So there was a whole bunch of concerns that are sort of these kind of other reasons, besides just the wildlife management aspects, but there was just the fact that but understanding that this is largely public land in Arizona. So where all of these cameras, these private properties are being hung on trees and posts everywhere is not on private property for the most part. It's on public land. Right. And so people are using these to really, and they're out there for sometimes year round getting pictures on public land. And so that just adds to some of the concerns that people had with these.
So let me throw this out at you. I had a conversation with Rick a while back on this topic, and something that he brought up that I think was a real valid angle to consider. You know, the public land issue is an obvious and easily defended explanation, but there's people out there that are going to be screaming at the top of their lungs, but I'm on my own land. And I want to be able to put cameras on my own land. And there's not a bunch of cameras on the water hole that's on my land. I want to be able to take pictures of the elk and the deer on my place. I'm hunting them. It's only me hunting them and so forth. And so the point that Rick made that I think needs to be brought out a lot, certainly in our conservation plan that we have here in the United States, is the wildlife belongs to everybody, right? So even on the public, even on the private land, they don't just get to do whatever they want with the wildlife and obviously utilize some benefits that are going to help them harvest only the best or the biggest and so forth. So address that, the argument that even though you're on private land, you own the land, but you don't own the critters.
Well, Carlos, you said it there in a nutshell with that last statement. Arizona Game and Fish Department manages the wildlife for the people of the state of Arizona in trust. And, part of that is that, that we are establishing rules and regulations just like every other state, it's my private property. I should be able to do what I want, but you can't bait ducks on your private property. You can't bait doves, things like that, but there are rules and regulations that, in Arizona, you can't use a fully automatic rifle to take anything on your private property. So we are establishing rules and regulations all the time that affect how people use wildlife, take wildlife, participate in hunting and things like that, that does overlap onto private property. So this mm-hmm. is just one more of those things. But in Arizona, this really isn't a private property issue for us. I don't have any numbers, but I don't have exact numbers, but roughly 75% of this state is public land. Between U.S. Forest Service land, Bureau of Land Management, State Trust, things like that. And I would venture to bet that 90%, at least 90% of the wildlife that is taken in this state comes off of public land. Mm-hmm. Most of our parcels of public land are very small. We do have a couple of very large, I'm sorry, we do have a couple of pretty small parcels of private land out there. There are some big ranches in a few places, but even a lot of those big ranches are made up of checkerboarded state trust land and private land. So we aren't like a lot of other states. And that's the message that really needs to be carried forward here is,
this is kind of a uniquely Southwestern situation. We aren't the only state to broach this. Nevada has regulations on trail cameras. I know Utah has been in the process of trying to regulate them some more, Idaho as well. And I think there's even some other states in the Midwest that regulate their use on public land as well. So it's really not, you know, it's not a private land issue. And the guy that's got a trail camera hung on the tree in his backyard is probably not going to be the target and generate the complaints or even a law enforcement issue out of this. But we've got a lot. I mean, there's going to be a lot of questions on how this gets enforced in the future. And then touching on one other issue that has really drawn a lot of attention is that with this being public land and the number of cameras that go, you know, that show up, is that there's a lot of people that feel like that by them placing a camera and them catching images of wildlife that are coming in there, they almost develop some sort of ownership on some people do, not everybody, obviously, but you know, some people will almost establish ownership over the rights to use that water hole or that location and try to, you know, they've established what they almost feel like is exclusive use to that because they were there first. And we've had a lot of conflicts over cameras, you know, chasing other people off of water holes. We've even had stuff happen where someone knew that a big elk was coming into, you know, into an area, into a water hole, and somebody else was hunting it before they were. So they came back later and they, you know, dumped one instance diesel fuel in that water to prevent elk or deer or anything from coming in there and using that and forcing those animals to use waters in other places, you know, where they were set up hunting. Yeah. I mean, we've had fist fights. I think even this spring, there was a gun was pulled on someone on the North Kaibab regarding, you know, conflicts over cameras and water holes and things like that. And it's just gotten to the point, you know, like Sean alluded to earlier, that it's taken this at some level, it's taken the spirit of what hunting is supposed to be out of hunting. It's turned kind of ugly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of a episode that I caught a piece of on television about the Louisiana game wardens. I think that's Louisiana law. I can't remember the name, but they had an episode where wardens were investigating a complaint of a duck blind that was on public land. And the duck blind in their law is public property. If it's on public land, anybody, the first one there that gets in the duck blind gets to use it. You can't say that's my duck blind. I built it. You have to leave or stay off my duck blind. I built it. You can't do that. Not on public land. So these guys had gone in and were hunting. And sometimes it's not even a blind. Sometimes it's just a particular region of marsh. So, I mean, I'm just using this example as an analogy to the cameras and the controversy. The game wardens had a complaint that this guy that had built a blind, when they went to want to hunt there, he would come in and he would disrupt their hunt. And he would even go so far as to tear the blind up while they're in the blind and do what he could to disrupt their hunt, driving his boat around them and keeping the ducks rallied away and so forth. So that guy ends up getting a ticket for disrupting somebody else's hunt, but he thinks because he built a blind there, it's his. So his area. And, you know, I find from talking to wardens all over the country, everybody's got the same problem. It's just a different species, or it's a different limiting factor, or it's a different tool, but there's something going on and it's almost the same interaction or controversy that seems to come up.
Yeah, you know, Carlos, one of kind of where this goes back to for me is that ultimately, I mean, we've had the same issues with tree stands, and we've had the same issues with even stick-built ground blinds and all that. the cameras is just one more thing to, for people to fight over and all that. And that's not why we're making this regulation, stricter, right? What it's really gets at is the trail camera has been used to the extent here that even our Fair Chase committee, you know, has came to the realization that there's a lot of these cameras basically being used to substitute for hunting, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. For the act of actually getting out and searching for and pursuing wildlife. And now guys are able to sit on their couch at home, watch the Outdoor Channel while the camera does all the legwork, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. nails down not only what's coming in here, but how big is every animal that's coming in here? What time and days are those coming in? And then by carpet bombing every water in the area, we know exactly which two he only uses. And now we know we've only got to go hunt this little tiny piece of real estate to be in the zone, right? And so really these cameras are being used to really take the place of the act of hunting. Right. And that's what the commission is trying to get at. That's what the Fair Chase Committee is trying to ensure maintains the focus of our regulations is that they require a certain application of effort and skill set or skill development to engage in the traditional hunting as you know in that context. And they want to eliminate what has become this technological substitute for getting out and hunting and getting out and teaching your kids about hunting. We've got lots of kids these days, right? Who their only thing about hunting is, oh, I go with dad and ride in the truck while I'm on my phone, and we go just check all the cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our hunting. That's what we do.
Right.
And then eventually we sit for one day in a blind because we know exactly what day and time these animals are coming in. So we go sit there and try to just shoot that one animal that I already have 15 pictures of or 500 pictures of.
That's interesting. So that's interesting to hear that you have something called a Fair Chase Committee. I've not heard of something like that before. And it stands to reason that we all have a responsibility and a interest in fair chase. And I think there is a line right there between always trying to keep up with technology and keep everybody in the game. Everybody's always trying to recruit more hunters. That's why we make this legal or make that legal. And they permit things that are going to encourage or help sportsmen to find interest in the outdoors over say a tennis court. So I can see what you're saying on the skills, the effort, the ethics involved in being cheated, so to speak, corners cut using a trail camera. But I find it more offensive for me personally, because I think the private sector is going to say to you, how many skills, how much effort, and how much ethics I apply is none of your business. I can do what I want so long as I don't break the law. But the thing I do find offensive is the idea of being able to target specific animals so easily on these limiting factor situations such as water is in Arizona. So, you know, to me, the targeting of a particular harvest animal is more of a hill to die on than what somebody else's ethics is. I mean, I agree with you on the ethics. Don't get me wrong, but I think there's a lot of people that are going to argue the level of desire and effort I put into my scouting and how I do it is my business. And I still have to perform the shot, and I still have to sit there in the cold, and I still have to hunt and all that on that particular day. But when you have people that are identifying a particular animal, and maybe there's multiple people with multiple cameras all after this same trophy, you know, or particular time that a herd comes in or whatever it is, I don't see how anybody could argue that that's not cheating. And
well, those things are going on in every one of our you know, premium hunts here, whether it's mule deer up on the strip north of the Grand Canyon, or whether it's elk hunts here in Region One, you know, those sorts of things, you know, or even whitetails, you know, hitting waters or salts or whatever down in southeastern Arizona. There's those individual animal targets are going on, but in droves here. Mm-hmm. And they've got individual animals all named, and some they've all got trail cam pictures of that they have of these target animals. You know, we took an earlier step at this issue with the live action trail cameras, the ones that send the pictures to your phone. As soon as they take a picture, it automatically dings on your phone. And then we actually banned the use of those for taking wildlife about 2019. So yeah, so a little over two years ago, we banned the use of those. And some of the types of situations that drove to that step were things like the guy puts a picture or puts his live action trail camera on a trail going over a saddle. And as soon as there's a picture of a mountain lion walking through it, they load up the dogs and head over there and dump the dogs in that saddle and trail the lion and catch it and kill it. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the driving things on the decision to ban those cameras in 2019.
So what's been the feedback on that in 2 years?
Well, interestingly, right, that didn't raise near the discussion in 2019 or 2018 when they were working on it as this one did. People were pretty easy to, it seemed like people pretty easily swallowed that we're not going to be allowed to use those live action cameras. Interesting that the static cameras, even though really the only difference is you have to drive out there to check the car. Mm-hmm. You know, is that this is raising such a lot more discussion about it. And,
Now, something else Rick brought out in an earlier conversation was the cameras are not prohibited by people using them for recreational reasons, you know, in their backyard or security on their property and that sort of thing. But anytime they're using it in the act of pursuing game to enhance your hunting, something to that effect, Rick, and forgive me, I'm not trying to misquote you. You want to straighten me out on what I just described, but only the hunters that are using the cameras to improve their opportunity there are the ones that this regulation is about. So that raises the enforcement difficulty. You guys address that?
Yeah, and that is, there are going to be a lot of challenges in this. I don't think there's anybody out there that thinks that this is going to be just slam dunk. You know, and there's no contest going on or quota, you know, being established by anybody to say, oh yeah, I'm going to be the first one to write this case, you know, write a ticket on and file on somebody using this. You know, I know that we're really trying to put the faith in our hunters in that, yeah, most of them want to follow rules and regulations for the right reasons. And I think we're going to see a lot of that. You know, I think there are going to be a lot of people that comply just because that's what the rules say. And that's what they want to be part of that. And they want to follow those rules, you know, which we all know that with hunters and with our limited presence in the field as officers, you know, we can't be everywhere at once. That we do rely on hunters themselves to regulate their actions, because there's a lot of times they're not in the view of anybody else. So yeah, I lost my train of thought there.
Well, we were just simply saying that you believe that there's so many people, and I believe this too. I agree with you that there's a lot of sportsmen and citizens that you can write a regulation and you believe they're going to follow it just because they're very compliant folks. They're that way. But there's a lot of other folks. It reminded me of the time as a little kid that I was given, told some instructions, and I wanted to ask Daddy why. Why, Daddy? Why, Daddy? And Daddy just said, just do what I said. And, you know, there's those folks that don't want to comply until they understand why and it makes good sense to them. And if it doesn't make good sense, if you can't justify it, then you've got a rebellious crowd on your hand.
Well, interesting that you say that, Carlos. You know, we have had, despite how loud some comments are online, we received tons and tons of comments on both sides of this trail camera issue. And so it's not like all the hunters are against this ban. That is simply not the case. We received just as many comments of people in support of this, wondering why we hadn't done something sooner, as we have people complaining that they're no longer going to get to use their camera to aid in their hunt. Mm-hmm. And so this isn't like, oh, you know, this isn't some, you know, annihilation of the tactic that everyone uses. There's a lot of people who don't use this for their hunt. And there's a lot of people who are furious that it's taken us this long to do something about the ones that are. Mm-hmm. And so just to make sure that folks know that whichever side of the issue you're on, there's a lot of people on both sides of this, and there is going to be a lot of self-policing by hunters themselves. And I anticipate that every time a trail camera is found in the woods for a while, we're going to be getting called. Mm-hmm. And back to the fact that these are going to be tough to enforce, and we are certainly not in a race to get out there and start hanging tickets on people. What we want is people to understand what the rule is, what it's trying to prevent from going on, and take their responsibility for their own actions to ensure that that's not what's going on. Mm-hmm. People are allowed to put a trail camera out and take pictures of wildlife all day long. Okay. Even under this new regulation, what they're just not allowed to do is do that for the purpose of aiding in the taking or aiding in the locating wildlife for the purpose of taking, or aiding in the taking of that wildlife.
So if you've got a guy out there that reports to you, he's found a trail camera somewhere. I mean, I happen to know that Arizona does not have lots and lots of game wardens. So how many trail cameras can you surveil waiting for Hunter Bob to show up to check the card or whatever on a particular camera?
I mean, right. Yeah, I agree. We don't have lots and lots, right? We have about, I think, around 75 field level officers in the state, and that's not very many. Arizona is a fairly big state. So what I will tell you is, just because there's a camera does not a violation make, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So when there is some other information coupled with the presence of a camera is probably the first level of starting to take at least a look at it to see what's the situation here. And is this something where somebody is violating not only this law, but the intent of what we're trying to do with this law? And we investigate lots of calls that turn out to not be a violation. But what I'll tell you is we are not sending officers out to run out to every trail camera that's reported to us. But when it's coupled with information that would indicate this person is using it for locating wildlife for the purpose of hunting that wildlife or something like that, then that's when that would initiate us investigating it. And even, as you know, even doing an investigation does not a violation make. That's just there was enough to it to cause us to take a closer look at it.
Right.
But this is no, you know, and this is really, it's interesting. You asked earlier about the the level of noise this one generated, as well as, you know, people's potential tone of, you know, well, if I don't know why, I'm not going to comply with it. And I do happen to have a little bit more faith in our hunting public, overall than that. You know, we have some of your states, some of your listeners' states allow baiting for deer. Guess what? In Arizona, we don't. Right. You cannot have anything other than salt out as a bait for deer. Now, there's a couple other things that are allowed, but if it's manufactured, like, let's, you know, I won't use any brand names, but if it's some deer attractant, it is illegal to take wildlife with the use of that in Arizona. And some of your listeners in a lot of the country would be aghast at that. Like, oh my gosh, you can't use a feeder and have a certain time that it goes off, you know? Right. And the answer is no. And you haven't been able to since, I think, about roughly 2014, or maybe even before that. And so that didn't create the noise level either. It created a little bit of noise when they went to do that. Part of the reason it was noise is that the commission had been actually entertaining the possibility of not even allowing salt.
Now, is that rule on public and private land?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. None of our take laws differentiate in Arizona between public or private property. None of them. Mm-hmm. And so that baiting law is kind of the same, right? It's not illegal for somebody to go put some corn out in the woods in Arizona necessarily. But as soon as they are taking wildlife with the aid of that bait, that is a violation. And if they placed it for the purpose of taking wildlife, even if you go put some deer attractant out for the purpose of sitting there in archery deer season and shooting a deer, just the act of placing it is the first ticket. The act of actually sitting there hunting over it is the second ticket. Mm-hmm. And so it's really not that different from this trail camera type of enforcement, right? Mm-hmm. There is going to be legal trail cameras out there, and there's probably going to be a lot of them. Right. And it's going to be the ones that an investigation leads to the fact that they are using that to aid in the take of wildlife. In hunting, that's where they're going to have crossed the line to a violation.
And Sean, you didn't mention, and the harvest of the deer with a camera is the big ticket.
And it's the third ticket, right? And maybe a fourth and fifth. And
That's where it really runs into more money, I would think.
Yes, I bet.
So that you're going to declare that an illegal harvest. And so the antlers aren't going in the record book, and you don't get to keep the head, and it's going to be probably the biggest fine of all.
That's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, another point I want to touch on, and because you triggered a thought earlier, Carlos, when you mentioned, you know, kind of opportunity, and it ties back to our population numbers here in Arizona. And that we really do, and Sean mentioned it earlier, is like we really do have a low density of deer here. I mean, you're allowed to take one deer a year in this state. And you know, we don't have these situations where people can hunt multiple deer, you know, does and bucks. You know, we don't have any doe season. Well, we do have, like, I think one youth hunt that allows the take of does. But other than that, we're bucks only. You can take one deer a year. Other than some of our archery opportunity, which is over-the-counter tags, all of our general deer hunts, our rifle hunts, are limited, and they are draw tags only. So when you start looking at things like we have a limited number of deer, we're allowing for X percentage of harvest. And when harvest increases, you know, so the number of people that are out hunting are taking more of the deer, then we have to start adjusting permit numbers in those situations. Mm-hmm. And so permit numbers go down and down and down, and harvest keeps going up. and we're not growing any more deer because of drought conditions and things like that, well, then something's got to give. And yeah. when you, so you start looking at things like, well, we can regulate some of these tools that are increasing hunters' efficiencies and still keep people hunting in the field, tags in people's pockets, because in the end, that's what we want.
Right.
We need to maintain this hunting heritage. It's a valuable wildlife management tool. It's obviously part of, you know, a big part of what our country was, you know, believes in and was founded on with the North American model. And that's also a big part of what we're trying to maintain here is keeping people hunting, keeping as many people hunting and allocating that harvest of a limited resource out across our hunting public.
Well, that's really well said. Really well said, Rick. And, yeah. And I think that, you know, I didn't do a bunch of homework on Arizona and maybe I should have, but the fact that it's only a one, deer harvest per citizen per year says a lot right
yeah,
there.
I didn't know that.
No,
that's news to me.
And
well, it's not even just that, right, Carlos? That's it's one per year. If you get the limited tag,
if you get the
you know, there's, tag, lots, yeah. there's tons and tons of people who apply to hunt deer here who are denied.
Yeah.
In fact,
wow.
Most of them are denied and they don't even get one deer a year.
Mercy. And so if a person is bow hunting and they've got the tag, it's buck only always, or is there ever exceptions, or are they ever allowed a doe harvest?
99% of our 99% of our hunts are buck only, yes.
Mercy sakes.
Wow.
Well, that tells us a lot right there, because so many other people in the state, and this goes back to the to the Facebook discussion that was going on, Rick, that I know you chimed in on. So much of the state, so much of the country, the U.S., is crawling with deer. I mean, they've got deer on top of their deer, and everybody knows and everybody struggles to try to recruit hunters to the outdoors, and we need more sportsmen, and we like them to buy their license, and we like them to participate. We need them to help harvest the deers and keep the population under check and all that. But in some parts of the state, like you guys, I think it escapes many of us that you're struggling still to have your population higher, and you've got those limiting factors, so you can only get it where it can naturally go. But everybody else is trying to, you know, keep the deer off the highways, keep them out of the gardens, keep them off the farmer's land, and they're just, you know, doing crop damage and all kinds of other issues. And so they're doing everything they can to get people to shoot does. Shoot the does. You know, they're the deer factory. We need to control them.
Oh yeah. No, I'm glad we took this turn, because it is really an important part of this conversation. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of other parts of the U.S. where, yeah, they're trying to figure out and invent more ways to get rid of deer.
Yeah.
And this really comes out as well in that I'm on a team right now where we're working on some rules, you know, and potentially seeing some changes, but we're analyzing different methods of take. And, you know, things like use of crossbows during archery season and things like that. And in Arizona, the only time you can use a crossbow during an archery season is if you've got a permit based and a letter of authorization from a doctor that says that you've got a limiting factor that prevents you from being able to draw a regular bow. But I know, like Oklahoma, you don't have to have that. During an archery season, you can hunt with a crossbow. But as you come to the western states, where we are more limited in our resources, that those restrictions increase. Mm-hmm. So where you're seeing these areas with less regulation on these methods of take, it's pretty much in direct proportion to the deer population and that limited nature of that resource. We keep saying deer, and it's not just deer. Of course, deer is just a good general term for elk and every antelope and everything else. But, you know, you see an increase in regulation and regulating that take and that method of take when that resource is more limited.
Right. Well, it all sounds like game management, and we all know that, you know, hunting is just one of the tools.
And hunter management.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People management.
Yeah. For sure.
For sure.
Well, you guys have really shed a lot of light on it for me. And, you know, I tend to think that I know a little bit about some of the strategies that go on. And I hope that the sportsmen take time to pick up on some of these factors that are overlooked by many of us. And you know, everybody has these this prism they look through, and it's usually managed by their local circumstances. We've got lots of deer in Oklahoma. You can have six in the regular season. We want you to take as many does as you can. You've got a holiday season. You can take another doe. You've got a controlled hunt. You can take another deer. So there's eight deer right there. And then you've got the youth, and that doesn't count towards junior's deer. If he gets one, he still gets to keep going out and get more deer. We legalize the crossbow because we want to do whatever we can to, you know, get people started in the field and try hunting, and crossbows are easier. So, we're gonna make it where you don't need a doctor's permit anymore. What else can we do? We've got all these groups out there that are trying to, you know, do things to help the youth, find an interest in the outdoors and have archery in schools to teach them to shoot bows. And everybody needs to take a youngster out and help them hunt and learn how to do something besides play on their phone or whatever else activities there are. We know there's such a demand on everybody's time. Parents, kids, they have all got activities. Me personally, here locally, I've seen a lot of great deer hunting destroyed by soccer fields. And soccer is an up and coming sport, and good for them. But you know, I see those soccer fields, just giant swaths of land being bulldozed and turned into a soccer field. And it looks like the prettiest green grass for about 11 months out of the year. And about 1 month out of the year, it's covered up with people screaming at the soccer fields. So, I've got an issue with soccer now. I just, you know,
that's
don't.
Just, that's just because one of your old stomping ground, hunting grounds.
Yeah,
was,
well, I hate to see habitat lost to anything. And so my point is, though, we've got all these things combating the numbers of hunters, and you guys have it as well. You want hunters, but yet you can't give them lots and lots of deer permits. So that's something I don't think everybody realizes, you know, in our neighborhoods where we have lots of deer.
True story. Well, let us know when we can come out and help you shoot some does.
I'll bring a buckload of kids.
Hey, we've got plenty out here, I'm telling you.
We really do. In Oklahoma, if you want an archery hunt, including with a crossbow, it's about $360 for a non-resident archery license, and that allows you six deer.
One license.
Wow. One license. Two of those can be bucks. All six of them can be does. But, you know, we limit the bucks because we got those guys that are, of course, only interested in horns. And we want you to take some of the deer factories. So that's the reason why they really point the numbers to the doe harvest. But you're welcome.
Well, isn't that why you guys introduced cougars into Oklahoma?
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you can edit that out later.
Yeah,
That's a whole nother show.
That's a whole nother show.
Yeah.
So, those are harvesting a lot of our deer too. So.
Right. Well, you guys do have a bunch of lions, I know, but.
We do.
But now, what are the lions eating? What's their number deer one elk. Food source? Deer and elk.
Deer and elk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Well, that's been very. Enlightening, and really do appreciate you guys taking the time to visit with us. And I mentioned this to Rick and Sean. You may or may not know this. Rick keeps this on the down low, but I told Rick I wanted to put a plug in for the NAWEA organization. That's how I first met Rick, and I'll never forget when he came to a NAWEA organization conference. NAWEA is NAWEOA, and that stands for the North American Wildlife Enforcement Officers Association. Sean, you may have gone to that. You're a game warden, but I've never met you there. And, of course, Rick is the current president of that organization, and it's a fraternal organization of game wardens from all of Canada and all of the United States, the only one of its kind. And, you know, we've got about 9,000 game wardens in North America compared to 9 million police officers in North America. So if you do the math, 9,000 versus 9 million, we're a pretty tiny percentage of law enforcers, but the organization meets once a year, and Rick leads a board of directors that filters the information for the organization, for all the game wardens in the continent. And that's where we all meet, and we find out that we have a lot of these similar issues to discuss and to address and try to keep everybody encouraged and trained up and professional. So I appreciate the NAWIA organization and having met Rick that way. And maybe we'll meet you there as well, Sean.
Sean's been to, he was in our Wyoming conference. He's our current Arizona jurisdictional representative.
Very good.
We're kind of handy with him being like two doors down from me when we're in the office. But, you know, this I started coming to NAWIA conferences in 2005, and I think I've missed two conferences since that time. And some of my best friends in this world were met at those conferences. You are correct in that it is very much a fraternal organization. We are built on, you know, promoting professionalism and excellence. And, you know, we work on training, networking, and professional recognition. And it's been an extremely rewarding experience and relationship for me. It encourages me to, you know, to try to achieve some of the same measures of excellence as some of our, as some of our brothers and sisters out there in conservation law enforcement. I know Sean, who's been a high achiever in this agency, in this state, when we were awarding the Officer of the Year to one of our Georgia officers at that Wyoming conference, you know, Sean told me later, he's like, wow, he's like, crap, I listened to what that guy had, what that guy's achievements have been in the last couple of years, and it makes me feel like I don't do anything. So, you know,
I was in the same shoes.
Yeah, I know. I'm sitting there trying to present an award that I'm not worthy. But you know, that, and you know, and another side to this, and it's been a couple of tragic years for us, but we also do recognize line of duty death and provide financial support to those families that have lost officers in the line of duty, and likewise in even officers that died that was not in the line of duty. And we have a financial backing to help support our officers in need. And if nothing else, if we did nothing else, that to me would be a worthy achievement. It's been heartbreaking over these last couple of years having to write a check and write a card or send a card to a family that just lost an officer. For sure. So that is some of NAWIA, and some about NAWIA, and it's a great organization and, you know, part of what keeps me rolling.
I just wanted sportsmen to know that, NAWIA has a website, NAWEOA.org, and that's a good outfit to look into supporting and support them just by following what they do and support your local conservation officer. NAWIA has a quarterly magazine called International Game Warden Magazine, and anyone can subscribe to that magazine and follow NAWIA activities and follow game wardens across the United States and Canada, what's going on, and read about some of their great works that they're doing in wildlife management. So I just wanted to plug IGW Magazine, NAWIA organization. Rick, we appreciate you as our president of that fraternal group. Sean, I apologize that I haven't met you before. I know if you're a J rep from Arizona, you've been there, but I've gone to a lot of these as well, and there's lots and lots of folks that attend the conferences, and so we've missed, and I look forward to meeting you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you're always busy talking, Carlos.
Go figure. Go figure.
It's hard. It really is hard to get a word in edgewise with this guy. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm slowing down now that I've retired, you know.
Just barely.
Good. Just barely.
Well, listen, we'll catch up with you again on another topic maybe sometime and possibly check back and see how things are shaping up on this. I'm glad to hear that your cellular trail camera issue didn't cause anyone to burn down the state. But, you know, on the discussion groups, sometimes they look very hot-headed, some of the things that get said. And so I appreciate getting to visit with you guys and discuss it because, like I said, I like trail cameras, but we all have to adapt our equipment, our applications of technology and so forth to keep it within check of what your wildlife will support. So kudos to you guys for taking that on.
Well, appreciate the time and the platform to talk about it.
All right. We'll let you go, Rick, Sean. You guys stay safe. And look forward to meeting you up and visiting again.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys. Right.
See ya.
Thanks. Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Game Warden Connection podcast. You know, we set out to make this podcast a resource to help anyone wanting to get more out of the outdoors. And it doesn't matter if you're a fisherman or if you're a hunter or just an explorer, we're here for you. If you have any questions, comments, please reach out to us at gamewardenconnection.com, and we'll do all we can to help make a connection with you and help you find the answers and the insights that you're looking for. You can also connect with us on Facebook. And lastly, if you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a 5-star review so we can continue to grow and improve. Until next time, enjoy the great outdoors.